from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
I'd like to say something.
This is Dirt and Spray.
Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin 4 miles.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
God, there was one week when you wore sweatpants every day.
Oh, you know what? If they were Sean John sweatpants, it would have been fine. But because they're Costco brand, it's like the worst thing I could do.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour two. Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, YouTube. Good morning, YouTube. A lot to get to in the second hour of the program.
Chicks dig it.
Do they?
They dig it. Yeah, they're digging it.
I hadn't heard that.
They're in on the show today.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
I had a gal come and introduce herself when I was down in Eugene on Saturday. And it was, she said, I'm one of your female listeners. It was an older gal.
That's
she
great.
Came, she wanted to take a picture. I was like, this is awesome. Look at this. Flying in the face of stereotypes. We're just for the youngs.
That's why I try to be careful how I'm phrasing things.
That's
football
right.
Fans, not all the dudes.
That's
There's
right.
a lot of female sports fans out there.
Ladies are out there and they're listening, man.
I love to hear. We got the WNBA coming here soon. I'll have a lot of interest in that in the summer with my kids. And so we'll have more and more sports. Female viewership is up in the WNBA. And
numbers are crazy, man. Imagine that first game, Caitlin Clark comes here and plays in Portland. It's gonna be a big deal.
I might have to
how much are those tickets gonna go for?
Hundreds.
Caitlin Clark to Portland in her first time.
It was Dallas, by the way. Yesterday we talked about the arena that had more Caitlin Clark. It was the Wings, and I should have known that because Cheryl Swoops took herself off the broadcast because Cheryl Swoops looks like an idiot.
This is now becoming a thing. I see
that we got a beef.
She is so anti Caitlin Clark that she just can't talk about dying on a hill. You'd think at some point you'd give up on that one, right?
What's weird to me is not just dying on the hill. It's like dying on the hill to an athlete who's like openly been nice and respectful and
yes, done nothing wrong,
given love to everybody in the league and the legends and the goats. There's been no animosity or ego with her. Wright Thompson is writing a huge piece about her, says she's like the most down-to-earth athlete he's ever covered, like the most realized athlete. She knows who she is publicly, and she knows how to do that so she can have a private life too. And yet Cheryl Swoops would just die on the hill instead of just being like, hey, you know, she's actually been great for us.
She's been really good this year, too. Like, it's not just the ratings and the attention she's bringing. She's also a really good player.
Speaking of basketball, are you guys ready for a couple weeks? The Blazers camp opens.
Yay!
NFL's We've been blown and gone. Yet,
and we're like, oh.
Yay!
Might have a Jeremy
Season
Grant
opens
trade.
Opens October 22nd in the NBA.
October 22nd. That's a little over a month.
Just a little over a month.
Away.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nobody's ready for that.
No, the answer to that, Bob, is no, I'm not ready. Although I am excited for them to announce their TV deal, so I know what channel they're going to be on, and I have the ability to watch them this year, unlike last year.
Mm.
So I'm very excited about that.
We get some Ricky Pearsall stuff coming up at 7:15. We haven't talked about him much.
The story gets more amazing as people are starting to talk now, knowing that he's going to be okay.
This is going to end with him catching the game-winning pass in a Super Bowl, right?
Has to.
I mean, it does have to.
It has to.
You know, those are for selfish reasons.
This year, it has to.
That's a movie if it happens.
Absolutely it is, dude. That
Who
is...
plays White Ricky? We've already had a White Ricky movie when Matthew McConaughey was in it.
Yeah.
Well, it was, can Wahlberg still pull off Vince Papale? Can he pull this off?
Isn't he a bit old to be Ricky Pearsall?
I don't know if, and Ricky Pearsall, to me, a little bit taller, a little bit skinnier. Hmm. I feel like when I look at Wahlberg, I think more of like a short, stocky, slot wide receiver.
Is it Timothée Chalamet? Is they just put him and they make him gain like 50 pounds of muscle?
Okay, it could be.
Steroid his ass up the way did Chris Evans to be Captain America.
I think we could pull that thing off. You just got to get all the fake tattoos on the arm and leg and set it in. He'll
be
fine.
Easy. That's easy.
Nothing to it, man.
We'll get to that coming up at 7:15. We talked a little college football in hour one. I want to ask you guys, did you walk away from week one and I tell you Georgia and everybody else? Do you agree with that? Is that your same feeling? Does this feel like, because going in, we had said, for example, the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Big 12 is going to be fun and it's going to be exciting because there's no elite team. So I guess what I'm asking is, outside of Georgia, do we feel like we have elite teams yet? Is it feel like
clearly
an open-ass
Clemson
field?
Was not, and so
they don't fall in the elite category.
I would have said week one. That's true.
I don't know yet. I mean, Georgia certainly had an advantage of some continuity with guys at key positions, including quarterback, that knew what they were doing. And I think in week one, that makes a ton of difference. As the season goes on, we'll see how much of a difference. But Tennessee, absolutely, that new quarterback looks like he's picked. I mean,
also who they play.
No, I understand that.
Chattanooga.
Alabama looked good, too.
They played Western Kentucky, I think.
Yeah.
Texas looked fantastic, but again, who did they play? Exactly. Now they go to Michigan. They got it. Can the offense steamroll like that against a real defense? So I'm not ready to give it to just Georgia yet.
But Ole Miss scored 76. Miami kicked Florida's ass. I think when you go down it, you get past 12 where you're like, man, the Big 12 is still unknown right now. There's more than 12 teams that maybe you go, oh.
The tricky part isn't, it's because you have to win three or four games now, back to back to back, against the best quality opponents. And that's a different deal than getting to have one big game every three or four weeks the way your schedule sets up in the regular season.
Well,
only having to win two games, you know, 15 days apart.
Well, and the other part of that, too, is we're coming off a national championship in which a team in Georgia who had won, I want to say, 30 games in a row and had an undefeated regular season lost a close, heartbreaking game to Alabama in the SEC title, and they did not get an invite to the college football playoff because of that, which is laughable on the surface because Georgia was easily the best team in the country last year. They lost one game at the end of the year.
Wasn't it their first loss in like 3 years?
Yes, since Alabama beat them 3 years earlier or 2 years earlier in the SEC championship game, and then they revenged that loss by winning the national title. If we had an expanded playoff last year, I think we're talking differently about Michigan and they don't win a national championship because I firmly believe that Georgia was still the best team in college football. I agree with the premise on the whole that after them, it does feel very wide open. There's a lot of really good teams that we're not quite sure exactly how good, but Ohio State, Texas, Bama, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, Penn State, you know, you go through the whole Miami and USC, what they did this weekend, Oregon, if they could bounce back. I think those teams are all kind of jumbled together, but I still think we're living in a reality in that sport where it is kind of Georgia and then a gap and then the rest of the teams that have to fight for that spot. And to Swag's point, it's just going to be different going forward. Like Georgia is in the playoff basically, like write them in Sharpie every year. They're not losing more than two games. They might slip up. They might lose a random game. Every year that will be good enough for them to make the playoff. And when they're in the playoff, I'm not betting on anybody to beat them.
Well, and that's a fair thing to say. I guess what I would ask is, did you feel that way prior to Clemson that it would be them and everybody else? Or did you tell yourself that it's like them and then, I don't know, three or two or four other teams might be at that same tier as them? And then also, how much is Clemson looking like they look? I think goes to us thinking Georgia is so much ahead of everybody else. Like, did you go in thinking it was Georgia
did,
and everybody else?
I did. I felt that way
you
for the last 3 years.
You didn't think it was like Georgia, Ohio State, maybe your team?
No,
or,
I think there's still a gap. Until the only coach who was...
Until you see somebody not named Nick Saban
beat them.
Sure.
I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around it. The ironic part about the whole Clemson conversation, too, is We can't gamble on college sports here. I don't know where their odds are right now. I would be willing, if I could, on my DraftKings account to put a flyer on Clemson to win the ACC.
Well, sure, the ACC sucks.
It's not very good, and it's just basically beating Miami at this point because I'm not a huge believer, really, in anybody else in that conference. But it's funny that we say Georgia just beat Clemson. Clemson might not. Clemson could go 10-2 this year. They could go 11-1 this year.
31-point gap, though.
We saw this 3 years ago. They beat Oregon 49-3, and then Oregon looked up at the end of the year. They were 9-1. They won 9 straight games after that. And if they don't let games slip against Washington and Oregon State.
Was that one lost, though?
There was two of them, Washington and Oregon State, at the end of the year. They were in the mix for the college football playoff at the end of the year after losing 49-3 in week one. Like, Georgia does this to good teams, and I think Clemson is a good team. They're just not to the level of Georgia.
I guess my hope is that there's just not another, like, the way that we just talked about the Chiefs maybe being the Patriots for 20 years and that never going away because it's Patrick Mahomes. I guess I'm also hoping that we don't have this happening in college at the same time where Kirby becomes Nick Saban.
It would be really unfortunate.
Imagine just two, really our favorite sucked. Sport in this country.
Just dominated by two teams.
And we've gone from back-to-back, like 20-year run, 15-year run, into a 20-year run, into a 15-year run, four total teams. Like, it's so deflating to think that that could possibly be looming for us.
Well, and our buddy Josh Pate was talking about this on a show last night. We can ask him about it in a bit, but he was going over this with Mike Norvell of, like, making the argument kind of that we've made about quarterbacks in the NFL, where Brady kind of ruined it for everybody else, and now Mahomes is too, where we expect everybody else to be on that level. And if they're not, it's like, well, why is this guy a disappointment? Why is this guy overrated? It's like, they're not overrated. They're really good. They're just not Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes. It's not an easy thing to do. Kirby's going to do that for college coaches, where he is able to. He has gotten them to such a high level of efficiency, and they're so good every single year. It's not easy to do it and maintain it. Mike Norvell, Dabo, a lot of coaches are learning that the hard way. When you get to the top, it's not easy to just get into cruise control and win 11 games every single year. There's a lot of topsy-turvy things that happen in that sport, and he's kind of alone right now.
And you could very well be right. It's hard to pick any other coach ahead of Kirby for all the things you just listed. But what I would also say is I'm not sure that I'm convinced because they beat Clemson the way they did that Texas can't get them at Texas. Bama couldn't get them in a, what are they playing, the regular season? I think
they play in 3 weeks, right? They play on September 28th in Tuscaloosa.
Right? Is it Tuscaloosa?
In Tuscaloosa.
So, like, I just don't know if I'm quite there of saying, like, they have clearly separated into a stratosphere on their own, where I saw, like, Ole Miss has gone to the portal and they've got a returning quarterback, and okay, what, maybe Ole Miss is it. Maybe Nico at Tennessee with Heupel is the right combination. Texas is getting a lot of SEC winning, you know, in year one love. DeBoer in Alabama, I think Milroe could be a Heisman winner because of their numbers. They've got a 17-year-old who scored 2 touchdowns this weekend.
They do.
Like, I don't know if them beating Clemson the way they did has me thoroughly convinced they're in a stratosphere on their own yet. Now, I would understand why you would say it. They've only lost like one game in 3 years. But I think there's a lot of talent, and I just don't know if Clemson's at the top of that top talent. You know what I mean? Like, if Clemson's in the SEC or the Big Ten, where am I putting Clemson? But because they play in the ACC, it's a different conversation.
I think it's not just about beating Clemson the way they did. It's about what they've done on a 3-year average now and just how dominant they have been in the sport. Like, I don't think that's going to change, and especially in a 12-team playoff. Again, if there was 12 teams last year, they would have been in. They would have been the 5 seed, and I wouldn't have picked anybody to beat them. Doesn't mean it's a guarantee they win at all, but I'm not picking anybody to beat them. Some of these other teams will find out about, man. Texas goes on the road to Michigan this week. Michigan did not look good in week one. That's an offense that's struggling.
And if Texas is like 8-point favorites,
too. 7.5, 8 point favorite. You're going on the road. You're a national title contender. That's a game you win, and a game you win convincingly, because Clemson is a good team. Not an elite team, a good team. And Georgia just beat them by 30. So I'm not asking you to go into Ann Arbor and beat Michigan by 30 points, but go cover the spread. Look like you're a top 2 team in the country, similarly to what you did to Alabama early in the season last year. If you do that, maybe it'll change my perspective a little bit. But until then, to me, it's Georgia and everybody else.
Coming up next, we didn't dive much into this story, but a massive NFL story happened over the weekend. Let's talk about it next on The Fan. Well, something we mentioned.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Yesterday, didn't talk about much, was the crazy story of rookie wide receiver Ricky Pearsall getting shot in his chest in downtown San Francisco this weekend.
Just nuts, man.
Point blank armed robbery, and a 17-year-old shot him in the chest. It went out his back. He avoided it hitting any major organs or ribs. The police officer on the scene that rushed to him and helped him get to the ambulance recognized him.
She did, yeah.
And he was just, you know, doing the natural, am I going to die? Like, what's going on? She's like, just be strong like you are out there on the field. He got treated, and he avoided any major hit of the bullet outside of going the chest to the back.
I think it went through, right?
Didn't it go it went all the way through.
Didn't get lodged. It went all the way through.
It went through. So he's been put on the reserve non-football injury list.
Thank you.
So he has to miss a minimum of 4 weeks. Remember Brian Robinson of the Commanders? This happened to him two years ago.
2 years ago, yeah. And he missed the first four games and came out to game five.
And he played.
Many Men was his song they played when he ran out. Yeah. And he that was one of the most badass things we've seen in the NFL in the last 5 years.
So a crazy story happening. The team was scheduled to be at Kyle Shanahan's house that night. They have a big team dinner hangout before the season starts. They just got Trent Williams back. He said he was motivated to return when he saw this story because he thought Pearsall was a really nice dude to him when he introduced himself. Ayuk just signed. He jokingly said he made this a lot harder than he needed to. But that made Niner fan feel great.
Yeah, thanks, man.
But John Lynch was talking yesterday at his press conference, and he talked about just being grateful that Ricky Pearsall was okay.
You know, by the grace of God, Ricky Pearsall is here with the team and doing really well. And just wanted to address that situation from a team perspective. We just all feel incredibly blessed. You know, was able to be down at the hospital, and if I heard it from one person, I heard it from so many down there. It was nothing short of miraculous that he came out of this as good as he did. You know, on behalf of Ricky and his family, I talked with Ricky this morning. He just wants to express, and the team wants to express our gratitude to a variety of people. Number one, the San Francisco Police Department. They were incredible in their response. They were incredible at the hospital.
He also talked about FaceTiming. Pearsall FaceTimed his teammates. He was in the hospital. They were at the party at Shanahan's house, and he FaceTimed him.
You know, I wanted to touch on, you know, at the time of all this going on, we had a team party that was scheduled. When I got to the hospital and visited with Ricky, it was one of the first things he said, Mr. Lynch, what's going on? I would really like everyone to go to that party. And I'd also like to talk to some of my teammates. I said, Ricky, you take care of yourself. But, you know, kind of a cool moment. We were able to pipe Ricky into the party, and he FaceTimed the entire group. And man, that show of love and respect was a real special moment for our team.
I mean, a crazy story right before the season starts, and now kind of a rallying around Ricky Pearsall being shot.
It is funny how quickly a narrative or storyline can change, where it felt like 2 weeks ago, the conversation around the 49ers was a little bit of contract dysfunction. Their number one wide receiver, are they going to trade him? Are they not going to trade him? The most important piece, arguably, on the entire team is holding out, and they don't know if he's going to show up. And Trent Williams, like, how's this going to go? How are you going to afford all this? Is this the year the downfall starts and the Super Bowl window is closing? Like, that's what the national narrative was 2 weeks ago. And it's horrific that it took something like this. This isn't the only reason. But you get the Ayuk deal done. Trent Williams admitting that this Pearsall getting shot was a part of the reason. He was like, yeah, I'm coming back. Let's sign the deal. My teammate just got shot, and I want to be there with my guys. And it's turned into a bit of a galvanizing moment for them as a squad. An absolute miracle that he is okay, that nothing more serious happened here. You think about a guy so young in his football career, first-round pick, realizing all his dreams. We sadly went through this in the offseason with Kyrie Jackson, what happened to him. Like, guys who were so young and so early in their career, it's such a horrific story. The fact that he's going to be okay is wild. The fact that he was out of the hospital the next day is wild. The fact that he was already back in the facility working out.
They saw him at the gym lifting
what?
Weights.
Dude, you got a hole in your what? Yeah. How? I don't even know how that works. But this might end up being a galvanizing moment for them that brings them incredibly close together. Debo's restructured his deal, so they got more money to spend. Like, we a lot of people have been looking at the downfall of the 49ers for the last 3 years, saying this is the year it happens. This is the year it happens. Yep. This is the year it happens. And we're going into another season where they're a very trendy pick to be a playoff team to a non-playoff team or a non-contender. I'm not there yet because they've been it every year, and we'll see maybe if this is their driving call all season long.
It'd be pretty wild if 4 weeks go by and he's there for week five.
He's already working out. I'm gambling on him playing now in week five at this point if he's already back in the gym.
I mean, Robinson came back for Washington. Yes. I believe he was shot twice.
Shot
in the leg?
I think so.
I'll go confirm that. But I remember when he got shot, us talking about this, like, whoa, what?
And thank God he's alive. And then there's no way he's going to play. And then there he was in week five taking the field.
And it felt like maybe I have this wrong in my head because I make everything like an emotional sports movie. I feel like he rushed for like 100 yards in
his first
game.
Had a good game. I feel like I remember it that way as well. I mainly remember him taking the field and just how emotional that scene was of this guy was shot twice like a month ago. And
yeah,
now
he was shot
again.
In his right leg, okay. Twice in his right leg.
During a car robbery, right?
Carjacking, yeah.
I mean, the other thing too, not to get too into the legal mumbo jumbo, like this kid is not a kid and he needs to be tried as an adult. I know they're kicking around how to handle this. He's 17 years old. Yeah. They're not releasing his identity, I don't believe yet, because he is technically a juvenile. I what are we doing here? This is an attempted armed robbery. You shot somebody through the chest. I don't care if you're 17. You need to be tried as an adult. If you're 17 years old and doing that, that's close enough for me.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. The mayor sounded off on this. And, of course, San Francisco is a big, hot political talking point for both sides. And she said this is unusual for Union Square. And many people were like, are you kidding me?
No,
but to be fair, I looked into it a little bit because I was curious. Some of the stuff that people think about that area of San Francisco, it's gone down because they have enacted more police officers
in that area,
in that specific area. And so that's why this was a little bit of a surprise of hadn't had quite this incident. And oh my gosh, this just happens. And it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon,
middle of the day, a highly trafficked area.
He was
of
shopping
the city.
For a bag.
Yes. He just was randomly shopping. Now they don't think there was any sort of target with this. They knew he was an NFL player, that it was just kind of a random instance. And also the 17-year-old went to the hospital with gunshot wounds as well. And so I think the insinuation there is that there was a struggle and Pearsall somehow got the gun. Eventually it shot him too, which is just, I mean, it's just insane. The entire story is wild, and you're just thankful that a guy so young in his life is it seems like going to be okay and maybe even play in 5 weeks.
It was was it 2022 when Brian Robinson got shot?
I want to say that was 2 or 3 years ago when that happened.
Because I looked up.
There was another one this offseason. Tank Dell got
a
shot.
I don't know if he got shot the same way, but he had a minor. He was involved in a shooting.
He had a bullet wound, but that was obviously in the offseason. But I remember the Robinson one. I want to say it was 2 or 3 years ago that story happened, and then he ended up playing in week five of the season.
Yeah, so 2023.
Yeah, 2 years ago it happened.
Okay, so 2022. His first game was 10-9, October 9th, 22 yards.
Okay.
9 carries for 22
Misremembered
yards.
It a little
Misremembered that a little bit, but then he came back the next week in Chicago at 60, 73,
I mean, let the man ramp up.
Hey, November 27th got 105 there against the Falcons.
There you go. So I remember him having a decent year, and it just was wild that it happened.
I don't know where San Francisco will be in their schedule if he's out and he comes back in week five, if he just only misses the minimum of four. But it looks like it'd be a home game against Arizona.
Yeah, so October 6th.
If he comes back October 6th, that's going to be an insane reaction from the crowd.
And rightfully so, man. He deserves it.
We got Josh Pate coming up. Some college football conversation with our good buddy Josh Pate. The Josh Pate College Football Show every Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Or no.
Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday.
Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. Yep. Thank you. Yeah. So he'll join us coming up at 7:40. So a little bit of a short segment coming up next.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. With memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. Josh Pate coming up in a matter of moments. We'll talk some college football with the commissioner of the sport here in a bit. The dirty poll will follow at 8 o'clock. And then I did decide yesterday, I felt bad. It was a Tuesday. We had too much to get to. It felt like a Monday, but it was a Tuesday. We were too jammed. We couldn't mail sack it up yesterday.
Yeah.
And so I felt bad. The listeners enjoy the mail sack. I enjoy the mail sack. We will get a hump day mail sack on at 8:15. So get your questions into the Vancouver Ford text line.
It was a real jams fourth yesterday.
It totally was. Yeah. Just a lot of things going on. 503-864-6326. Ask away. We will answer them at 8:15. I think I hear something in the distance. Now, I have been waiting for this moment.
Whistling in the air?
There's a whistling in the distance. There's a tremble. And I've been waiting a long time for this because I have staked my claim on this take and I have not backed down from this take despite at times maybe it not looking like a good take. I hear that fat lady singing. Mariners, bury them. Bye-bye. We'll see you next year.
Yeah, see.
You can't beat the Angels. You can't beat the A's. Even the Mariner fans who were screaming at us anytime I said something critical early in the season are now tweeting us pictures of poop saying our team sucks. Like, yeah. We've been here all year, buddy. Where you been? One Mariner fan texted in earlier. Let me go find this. No. Just in a random, unsolicited Mariner text. And said, Mariner fan here. We haven't got to it yet, but just letting you know now. We're done. This is BS. I'm not watching another Mariner game this season.
Drop below 500 for like the first time since April or May.
Six and a half out of the division. You're 5.5 out of the wild card. And those top wild card teams in the AL are not letting up at all. They're playing great baseball.
Was there like 18, 17 games left? I mean, there's only 3 weeks left in the regular season.
20.
Okay.
Yeah, 20 games.
20 games. You got to make up 6.5 in the division in 20 games. That ain't happening.
They blew a 10-game lead in 20 games. Can they make up 6.5 in 20 games?
Yeah, you go 19-1. Maybe you got a shot at it.
You only have one 3-game series left with the Astros.
Yes.
If you had 6 games left with them,
maybe.
Then that's your only hope.
Yeah, can they score a run?
You have the Yankees in that stretch, who are also in a division
race. They
hitched
their wagon to Dan Wilson. The only thing left for ownership to do in the offseason
is to sell.
Well, there's one of two things.
Sell. It's not a Jerry DePoto. Look, you can hate Jerry DePoto.
I mean, firing him, sure, he should be fired, but also sell.
But the next guy's going to come in and play game that this guy's playing.
Well, you can go on a Mets-like spending spree, and
they're not going to do that.
If you're
They're not going to fire DePoto. They will never do that. I mean, there's already rumors coming out that they might start selling off some of their young pitchers because they don't want to pay them.
Yeah, Divish says they might end up trading Gilbert or Kirby.
Yes, because they don't pay for a bat in free agency, so you got to trade one of your arms to go get a bat.
Yeah, because trading pitching is the way to do it in baseball. That's what wins you World Series.
Like, it just
trade away your good arms.
Can we just, like, I feel like this is the moment. We had this last year with our wonderful co-worker, Joe Fisher. Joe Fisher would come in and scream at us from time to time during the football season last year about how we were being mean to his Dallas Cowboys. And how can you not take them seriously? And I said, Joe, are you kidding me right now? Yeah. This is the same. Nothing has changed.
20 years of history.
They're always a good regular season team, and then they get their ass whooped in the playoffs, and we act surprised when it happens again the next year. They are an unserious organization.
Mm-hmm.
Can we just all remember this for next April, May, June for the Seattle Mariner conversation?
Again next
when they
year.
Don't add any bats, they have good pitching, they score 2 runs a game, and they're like 3 games up. Can we just remember this is not a serious organization and just fast forward to August?
Also, you've seen it the last couple days, right? They've lost in what? Walk-off fashion.
Walk-off fashion.
All those one-run wins they had to start out the year that built them a 10-game lead. Oh, look what happens when you play that game. It goes the other way as well, and they're not winning them anymore.
So if you can hear that in the distance, that is a fat lady. She is singing, and I think we dug the hole in the backyard, and the Mariner coffin's in it, and we'll see you next year.
That's an opera lady right there.
See you next year. All right, Josh Pate, the commissioner of college football, he is next on 1080 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. We're playing random drops, getting ready for the commish, Josh Pate. Every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday.
Oh, man, you were hitting the panic button yesterday. I was wondering how much he was hitting the panic button, too, because he's eyeing your duckies.
I saw him talk about it on Sunday. I think he's similar to, in my line of thinking. He's the host of the Josh Pate College Football Show. As I said, every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock, live on YouTube, the podcast as well, at Josh Pate CFB on Twitter. Josh, you do something. First off, good morning. It's always great to catch up with you. You do something on the show that I quite enjoy, and you had another one last night. The Sarah McLachlan special, and this was attributed to Boston College and Florida State, because that was a pretty depressing game for the Seminoles on Monday night. There was a part of me being in Eugene watching Oregon and Idaho thought this could be a Sarah, like, am I heading for a Sarah McLachlan special? Has a winning team ever gotten one? Did you consider doing it, and how panicked should I be?
I didn't consider doing it. That doesn't mean it can't be done. As Meemaw always said, there's a difference in what can't happen versus what just hasn't happened. I was surprised by that one. About three or four times a year, I don't know if you guys ever experienced this, but we'll be at another game or you'll be watching another game or whatever, and you'll see a score pop up, and you just assume it's a typo, so you just go on about your business. And then you see the score again, maybe somewhere else, and it's the same thing. And you say, hold on a second. And then you flip over, and sure enough, Oregon's up by three on Idaho late in the game. And you're wondering, what happened to Dylan? And then you see, oh, he's playing. Nothing's wrong with him. What's going on? And then you slowly start to make sense of it, which it makes no sense. And you're saying, is this really Oregon? Surely it can't be. So that's why I didn't think I'd have Oregon-Boise State circled in week two as a must-watch game for me.
Yeah.
But here I am. I'm looking at the sheet of paper, and I've got Oregon-Boise State circled as a must-watch game.
Well, it was interesting because I was watching Oregon State, and then I had the Oregon game on my iPad, and I kept looking down. I'm like, dude, what's going on here? This doesn't make any sense. And so I kind of had the same feeling. What do you chalk it up to? Because we see teams have slow starts. Ohio State wasn't necessarily destroying Akron to start their game. Michigan struggled with Fresno State. Oregon came in with a lot of hype, a lot of optimism they could maybe compete, if not win a championship. What was kind of your takeaway from maybe seeing what you saw against Idaho? Of all the teams, Idaho.
Well, it's always trust but verify in college football. When you have as much roster churn year in and year out as we do, and when the players are as young as they are, it's always trust but verify. And we think things in spring and media days and fall camp, we all think things. You got to make sure it's true. So with Oregon, I thought they'd have a pretty good offensive line. They haven't so far. Doesn't mean they can't, but they haven't so far. I know the injury didn't hurt or didn't help, but they, in week one, couldn't run the ball. And I think the most glaring thing to me was they certainly didn't go into Idaho wanting to set a new or tie a new program record for pass completions. But they did out of necessity, because not only couldn't they run the ball, they had to try and win the game late. They had to make sure they didn't lose the game outright. And so there's Gabriel going 41-47, which is tying a program record set in the mid-90s by who knows who. And so then week two, okay, so forget week two for a second. Then you back up and you listen to Lanning in the post game in the locker room there, and he's talking about how you don't have to lose to learn a lesson. Learn a lesson from this. And there'll be a lot of folks, as you get removed from the game a little bit and you get your sanity and faculties back about you, you'll think, all right, well, we've seen teams overlook inferior opponents in week one before, and we have. And maybe that's all that happened here. My point is, if that's true, then they will boat race Boise State this weekend. So I'm happy to leave it there. Like, they dropped a little bit in the JP poll, but that's okay because it doesn't matter this early in the season. But if we were right in the preseason, or if we were wrong and week one was really true. We'll start to find that out this weekend.
Yeah, it's funny. The 4 days ago, it didn't seem like Oregon-Boise State was going to be a can't-miss game, but now it has that feeling on Saturday night down in Autzen. Josh Pate, our guest, at Josh Pate CFB, one of our favorites. Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock live on YouTube for the Josh Pate College Football Show. You can also check the podcast, which is a must-listen if you're driving down to a game this weekend. I want to ask you on two teams that I thought maybe opened some eyes that are trying to fix one of their glaring issues, and it felt like they both made an inroad there. If I had to ask you to buy stock in USC's revamped defense or Penn State's revamped passing attack, which struggled in bigger games last year, which stock would you be higher on 1 week into the season?
Well, I call my investment guy down in Birmingham, mm-hmm. which is the heart of commerce in the South, by the way, and I would say, I want you to diversify my portfolio. I want you to get me on a little bit of both of them. You can go 70-30 either way. I was stunned. I wasn't stunned at Drew Aller. I think highly of him. Mm-hmm. I was mildly to moderately stunned that USC defensively was able to do what they did. Because think about this. I think Nussmeier played a pretty good game, played a really good game for LSU. And they held him to 20. And they, I mean, when's the last time USC in a big game needed less than 30 to win? That's just wild. You can go back to Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, and that's a wild thing to think about conceptually. And so this is the worst they should have looked, guys. Like, defensively, even if he made the right hires, even if D'Anton Lynn was the right guy, it was going to take a while. So you should look the worst you're going to look early on, and they looked really good. So I believe in that. But I also believe in Penn State's offensive evolution, if you want to call it that. One game sample size, yes, everyone understands that caveat in week two, but they went, and for those unfamiliar, everyone's familiar that they could not stretch the field to save their lives in big games. They hadn't been able to for a while. Penn State's offense has been bad in big games. And so against Michigan and Ohio State last year, they couldn't do anything. They went to Kansas, and they got Andy Kotelnicki, the offensive coordinator, who was close to leading the country in a lot of the explosive play categories last year. And I was talking to some NFL scouting types in the spring and the fall camp season when they went to Happy Valley to see them practice. And all the NFL guys keep saying the same thing. They keep saying, do not sell on Drew Aller. Keep that stock. Do not sell on him. He's good. He's the real deal. They just had him saddled in the wrong offense. So I just tucked that away. All right, in week one, there they are, stretching the field. I mean, they had more, I can't remember the stat, but they had about half as many of a certain kind of explosive play in one Saturday as they did the entire season last year. So same thing with Oregon, but in the affirmative. Now we got to watch Penn State. They got Bowling Green this week. They should blow them out, but they're going to start getting into conference play. You'll start to get tape on this new offense, and then we'll see, because the best quarterbacks, you don't really adjust to them a whole lot. Like, you just have to go beat them. And we'll see if Penn State is that. I believe in both of them. It's a cop-out answer, but I believe in both of them.
I think it's tough when you see teams play run-of-the-mill, no-name programs, and they end up winning comfortably, right? Like, Ole Miss scores 76 points this weekend. I couldn't, for $100, I think, tell you who they played. I've already forgotten about it, but they took care of business. You may have gone into the season thinking, Georgia, everybody else. Do you feel that way, or did you feel that way going in, and do you feel that way now after seeing what they did to Clemson despite Nico and Tennessee looking really good, DeBoer and Alabama taking care of Western Kentucky the way they did? I mentioned Ole Miss there, maybe Ohio State taking care of Akron in the second half. Do you feel like it's Georgia and everybody else at this point, and did you come in the year feeling that way?
I did not come into the year feeling that way. I lean a little bit more that way at the moment, but people have to understand something. So like I put out the JP poll last night, which is just a power rating. And I have right now about a 4-point gap between Georgia and the next best team, which is Texas. And that means there is a noticeable gap, at least on a neutral field, between those two teams, which you can take that for whatever it's worth. But here's the important follow-up. They play that number two team on the road. They play the number four team, Alabama, on the road. They play the number nine team, Ole Miss, on the road. So there are three road situations against teams that can compete with them or match them that they've got coming. Not to mention, they play Tennessee later in the year. And so I think Georgia is noticeably, right now, the best team in the country. And again, for whatever that's worth in week two. But I do not think their path is nearly as workable as some of these other teams. So I picked them to be the number one team in the country and not to make the SEC championship game. As of the moment, I'm standing beside that. If they had Texas's schedule, they'd be a shoe-in to play in Atlanta. But they don't. So I don't think they're a shoe-in, despite the fact that I think they're the best team in the country right now.
Can I follow up real quick on that then, Josh? What is, if they don't reach that point, because we all, I think, out west are like, oh my God, they're going to do it again. What is the weakness to you when you see Georgia stopping them short of that?
There isn't one. Relatively speaking, their weakness is they don't have high-level edge rushers. They don't have guys that can collapse you on the interior. You could probably run the ball on them effectively if you have a high enough caliber run game. They're young in the secondary, but they're ultra-talented. All those dudes who are young are five-star young. So those are relative weaknesses. But I say relative in that those would be strengths for, you know, the number 23 team in the country. So there aren't glaring red flags anywhere, but they probably also don't have the competitive depth they've had in years past, but that's the same with everyone, because what the portal does to these elite teams is it doesn't take their starters, but what happens is there's going to be someone desperate enough out there to go offer the second string outside linebacker at Georgia $200,000.
Right.
And Georgia's not going to match that. And so they're going to let him walk, and they're going to be mad about it, but they're going to say, we're not overpaying for a guy who's not even a starter here. And so you're exposed. So the biggest weakness for all these teams that's hidden right in plain sight is they're one injury away from being way more vulnerable than they used to be when they had injuries.
We'll see how the expanded playoff affects that, too, with all the extra games towards the end of the year. Josh Pate, our guest, at Josh Pate CFB on Twitter. We'll give him a follow. His show is every Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, 5 o'clock live on YouTube. You can catch the podcast as well, wherever you get your podcast, the Josh Pate College Football Show. You joked about it last night, and I got a good chuckle out of it. Florida and Florida State are going to play at the end of the year, and trying to envision what that game is going to look like, it does make me laugh. How many combined wins will we have between those two teams in the last week of the season, and just what the hell is going on down there, man?
Where do we even want to start? Like, which one would you like me to start at?
Has there ever been a more I know this is a dumb moment of the, you know, prisoner of the moment question, but seeing the not only losing to an in-state rival for Florida, Mario doing what he did, and then the videos that you had on your socials as well as other places of the players talking to the Florida recruits on their way off the field, like that's like, you know, beating you up and stealing your wife, man. That had to have been as demoralizing a loss as we've seen in a while.
It was a slap in the face. It's tough, and you got to stand there while they do it too. So a couple of things here. Florida had about as big a contingent of official visitors as I think they've ever had at a game. They had circled this one. This was their moment. This was their stage. And they just got undressed in front of their home crowd. The place was basically empty except for Miami fans in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
And the recruits are still there. And that video, those videos you're seeing circulating, that tunnel is Miami's tunnel. And it's also the only access point for media. So everyone sort of gathered in that place, which is the worst place imaginable because Miami's about to come off the field in front of all the recruits, and everyone's got an iPhone up. And there the Florida staffers are trying to tell their recruits, go away, and trying to tell Miami players, don't talk to our kids, which, of course, exacerbates the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that's winnable at this point. For Napier, good dude. I just don't know how it's winnable. And then at Florida State, different situation. It's not a hot seat situation, but it may be a team that just he can't flip the switch on. Mike Norvell can't flip the switch on. And he's realizing today what I think a lot of other people are realizing, and that is the portal is really feast or famine. And if we're a major program who's going to sustain long term, we've got to build through high school recruiting. Okay, so I timed myself. And I just said that to you guys in 11 seconds. That's how easy that was. However, if you're Mike Norvell and you realize the same thing, that's like a multi-year process to really get your roster fully fortified through high school. Well, he's been there 5 years now. You know, so he's coming off an undefeated season last year. They won the ACC, so it's a weird situation in that there's no hot seat talk, at least not from anyone with a brain, but are we also talking about completely overhauling the way we do things half a decade in? Like, that's very atypical. But in these portal times, as Meemaw would call them, in these transfer portal ages, maybe that's what has to happen occasionally.
So I really enjoyed that part of your pod last night. In fact, it was probably my favorite section because I'm watching Florida State play and getting boat raced by Boston College. And like I wish no ill will towards him, but like I watched DJ up close personal last year, and I was never going to buy Florida State because he was their quarterback. I think we've seen that story before. You talking about the portal is interesting to me. So you kind of hit on it there. We saw it with LSU last year where Brian Kelly hits the portal and the season's about to start and he goes, I don't know about my secondary. And we saw that. The secondary sucked. We see it with Florida State. What have we learned collectively? What do you think these coaches are learning so far? It's a few seasons in. What's the appropriate portal to natural high school recruiting percentage breakdown for a really high-end quality roster and what these coaches are learning about using the portal?
Well, I think it's the same ratio as dinner to dessert. You don't live off dessert, but it seems like it'd be fun. The prospect of just eating ice cream all day, it sounds great. Now, of course, you're going to have, you know, heart congestion and crippling amounts of type 2 diabetes about yourself not too far down the road, but it sounds good. It's the same way in the portal. Think about the difference in the concept of going and recruiting a defensive end, having him in your program in strength and conditioning and nutrition for 2 years, and he's a you know, a spot player his sophomore year, but junior year or his third year, that's really when he starts. You could do that, or you could see a dude tearing it up at Michigan State on a bad team, and you just go pay him $750,000, and he starts for you next year. Well, the latter seems a lot more workable. That's really fun because that's the quick way to success. But the problem is that dude's been gone. In 12 months, he's on campus, and he's gone. And you didn't do anything to fortify your program. You just fortified that year's team. But you don't run a team. You run a program. And so long term, the compounding effect of that is if you don't have guys that you went and evaluated and recruited and had relationships and convinced them to buy into your way of doing things and then brought them in and worked them through your way of doing things, your culture, your systems, et cetera, you don't have a firm foundation. I mean, it's a house versus apartment. Like, do you own it? Do you rent it? It's the same thing with dinner and dessert. You ought to be living off of high school, and you ought to be supplementing cherry on top style with guys out of the portal. That's what Ohio State just did. That's what Georgia does. That's what Bama does. Texas leans a little more portal, but when you go to Austin, they almost bristle at talking about the portal. They want to talk about high school recruiting because they believe in that as well as their primary approach. They just got a little more money to throw around in portal. Oregon, same way. Watch and see. They've made a lot of headlines in portal. Long term, they'll back off that thing a little bit more, and they'll lean high school recruiting, which they already do, more and more. And the big boys who are at the table every year will have that profile. And every year there'll be a Florida State in the room that just happened to nail it any given portal cycle, and they'll fool everyone into thinking that's the way to do it, and then they'll be gone the next year, and then you'll be reminded, oh, no, it's not.
That's right. Yeah. What did Saban say on game day this weekend? Pay the right guy or your ass out of luck, basically.
Yeah, $20 million for your roster.
A lot of teams learn that the hard way. Well, I follow on the social, so I saw the great content from Gainesville on Saturday, even though, you know, Mario is still a controversial figure in these parts. It was hilarious to see Florida fans go through what they went through. You're going to be in Ann Arbor, Michigan, so remind people where they can find the socials. And then I've never been to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Oregon is going there this year. I won't be at that game, but hope to make that trip at some point. What do we make of the atmosphere? And easily the biggest game of the weekend in Texas and Michigan.
Oh, yeah. And I'm a kid from rural Georgia. So growing up, Michigan was, it might as well have been the North Pole. There was no way I was ever going to be able to go up there. So, I mean, this is, what, the fifth or sixth time I think we've been to a Michigan game in the last few years. That place is awesome. All of those sort of cathedral-type places, they're really old. There's normally only one access tunnel. That is the case here. And what I'll do, like if you follow on the Instagram channel, which is still at Late Kick Josh, negotiations are ongoing for the new handle. But if you follow over there, what I do is I'll get there early. I'm there throughout the game. I'm there on the sideline. I try and give people as good a behind-the-scenes look at these different college football venues and game days as I can because we get to see, you guys know this, you get to see a lot of vantage points and perspectives that normal fans would not see on the game broadcast or in the stands. And so that's just a little bonus thing that we do anytime I go to a game. I figure if I'm there and if I can see it, you might as well be able to see it too.
Yeah, it's going to be fun this weekend. Josh Pate, one of our favorites, every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. The Commissioner of College Football is live on YouTube with Josh Pate College Football Show at Josh Pate, CFB. On Twitter, go give him a follow. Serious congratulations, man, on all the stuff and the moves you made behind the scenes, the ownership stuff. As people in the industry, we've seen that, and it's awesome to see somebody win like that. So congratulations on all the changes. Thanks as always, and we'll chat again next Wednesday.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Josh Pate of the Josh Pate College Football Show.
Oh, I love that. I love that chat.
That's good stuff, man. Good stuff every Wednesday. He is very similar to me, still in you beat Idaho by 10. There's a panic. There's panic mode going on. You can't move the line.
It's a big weekend
Idaho.
For Oregon,
it's
man.
It's a massive weekend, and he highlighted that. Of it. You didn't really think it at the start of the year that week two is going to be a can't-miss game, but it has that feel to it. I want to react to a couple things that he said there, including the portal, because Florida State is an interesting case study. And then we got week one dirty poll action, baby. Don't forget, MailSack coming up at 8:15. Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Spring on 1080 The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.